Hey guys, what's up? It is week 332, and I bet you might be wondering, hey, well, I didn't see the last video, and now it seems like both these videos are coming back to back. I essentially got not a copyright strike, but a violation strike trying to put, I posted a DVD cover or something that they didn't like, so they basically said it was immediately like taken down, and they kind of gave me a week from making any of my videos live, off, or uploading anything new. So essentially, I have my video unlisted up there so anybody can watch it if they go or have a link. So it has not got the views it should, and you probably weren't alerted of it. So that's what's going on. The weekly video that you'll see, it will be up on Saturday, and then this one will be up Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever. We'll catch up and we'll figure everything out. Also, that's also a very important thing, that if you do like the YouTube channel and everything like that, make sure you follow me on Anchor and Spotify and places like that on Facebook so you can see what's going on. And God forbid I have to move somewhere besides YouTube eventually, if the copyrights get too bad or the rules get too bad, we can kind of carry some of the subscribers over. I know it won't be the same and everything like that. YouTube is very convenient, but it's also, you know, it can have a lot of rules that we would like to get around. I would like to get around eventually. I also recorded another 1981 review or sit down with Ian Urza. It was pretty good. I need to edit it and see what it's at. You know, I kind of realized there's not that all that much to say about The Prowler. We talked about The Prowler, which is a very fun slasher, but at the end of the day, it is just kind of a very tropey, well-done slasher with, you know, some interesting people behind it. But, you know, so there's not really, in this video, I'm also not going to do the comments and questions or anything like that, because there's only a few replies, and I might as well just wait until both videos for the next video to do everything. So if you asked a question in this video, 332, it'll be answered in 334 along with all the 333 stuff. Sorry, that's a whole big mouthful here. Let's hop into the reviews. The first one up is a doozy, I guess you could say, and this is The Girl from Rio. This is released by Blue Underground. This is a 4K. This is, of course, by Jess Franco. This is actually one of his 60s output, 68, and it's produced by Harry Allen Towers, who produced, I think, 10 movies by Franco, including the two Fu Manchu movies, Venus and Furs, which I love Venus and Furs. Now, in the 60s, Franco had a different output. You know, he wasn't the guy in the 70s or 80s who was making a lot of, you know, I would say 70s, he still had movies with budgets, but towards the 80s, you know, some of his Cannibal output or some of even like his 90s and, you know, shot on video stuff, Franco kind of was just spitting them out. And Franco got a bad reputation for, you know, just not making very many good movies. But in reality, when he had a budget, he could deliver on visually very pleasing films. And The Girl from Rio is that. I will give it that. Blue Underground does immaculate with their 4Ks. Look at the Fulci stuff and everything like that. And the Dead and Buried. They do a great job with that stuff. I will admit that The Girl from Rio is not one of my favorite Jess Franco films. And it's funny because you listen to Troy Howarth and Nathaniel Thompson on the commentary. And you also listen to Stephen Thrower on the special features. All new stuff shot for this release. Made for this release. And they don't seem to be the world's largest fans of A Girl from Rio either. I think Stephen Thrower is a little bit more of a fan, but they still appreciate it. And while watching this, I kind of felt a lot of the same complaints or the same kind of criticisms they had. I feel theirs is different than this, but I feel like the plot is just kind of a little inept, you know? It follows the story of this kind of playboy who has something that George Sanders wants. George Sanders was in stuff for you horror fans like Psychomania, his last movie, 72, and some other movies. He was a very popular and well-respected actor that ended up in a lot of the stuff that, you know, horror fans watch. So he's in this, and he wants something that this playboy has, but he gets kidnapped by this group, what is her name? Sumatra, and she has like a group of like Amazonian, like kind of high-tech women that are badasses that mostly just stand around and hold guns. And so it kind of has this war, as they explained it, a battle of the sexes. Now, they talk about this in the commentary, and they talk about this in the special features, that, you know, Jess Franco really kind of was, you know, more feministic qualities about his films for the time, while Harry Allen Towers is just kind of like, let's just get the TNA and the nudity and stuff in there. So it's definitely a mixture of, you know, exploitation and maybe pushing the boundaries a little bit. You'd see that kind of stuff in Corman movies, right, where you're like, oh, this is pretty progressive, and then you all of a sudden would see like a fish rape scene and you're like, oh, maybe not as progressive as I actually thought. But it is an exploitation movie, a product of its time, and with all Franco movies, there's so many different versions floating around for years, and they talk about that in the special features. The commentary is really good. I admit I actually enjoyed the commentary more than I enjoyed the film. Visually, it's a great looking film, of course. You know, there's multiple locations, and that's one thing Franco realized. You know, free you know, production value. If you get to a great location, it's not free, but it really makes the movie go a long way, as having a beautiful location and beautiful people in your movies, right? That was the joke they always make. Nudity is the cheapest special effect, and there is a fair share in here. Sanders is really great in it. His voice is amazing in it, and he's just very funny, and he's having a good time. He seems very jovial. He's kind of like one of the villains kind of deal. The action isn't great for me. You know, when they're shooting the guns, there's obviously nothing coming out of them. I could forgive it. You know, it's not the end of the world. It's just not... I would not say that Franco is the best kind of action kind of director, or even like gore director, if you're looking for that kind of stuff. He was always kind of erotic or beautiful locations or almost surreal in a way. Like, so this movie doesn't play into a lot of his strong points. Although it does have some of the qualities that we all like in Franco, right? That people, big Franco fans have. This one is not one of my favorites, I will admit. But it was nice to see it in 4K. It looks amazing and a great, beautiful cover art. George Sanders is top notch in here. The lead guy, he doesn't do much for me. I mean, he's not horrible. He's not great. He's just kind of there. The women are beautiful, of course. As far as the special features are concerned, we have a new audio commentary with film historians Nathaniel Thompson and Troy Howarth. And then we have, that's on the 4K and the Blu-ray. But the Blu-ray has this new special feature here. We have Rockin' in Rio, interview with Stephen Thrower, author of Murderous Passions, The Delirious Cinema of Jess Franco. This is 40 minutes. He goes into depth. He knows his stuff. Stephen Thrower is one of the most, you know, one of the, I guess, the big voices on Jess Franco. And then we have some carried over stuff. Roland in Rio interviews with Jess Franco, producer Harry Allen Towers, and Shirley Eaton, all of which I'm sure have passed. I'm not too sure on Shirley Eaton, but I imagine so. The other two most definitely. New additional scenes from the German version, a trim reel, poster and still galleries, new riff rack track edition, The Girl from Rio, riffed by Mike Nelson, Bill Corbett, and Kevin Murphy. So there we go. Another one here with Dolby Vision, and the sound's pretty good as well. And we don't have like a huge mix like we typically do. It's an older film. It probably didn't have like the elements to kind of do that. It's not like an amazing mix that they have in Zombie or Dead and Buried or Maniac. But yeah, Girl from Rio. If you love Franco, if you love Blue Underground 4K, check it out. I always watch Franco movies. He's just kind of one of those. There's like probably like 100 horror or cult directors that have that name recognition for me, that I'll just watch anything they do because I'm invested in their careers and their lives at this point. So Franco is definitely one of them. Made my top 50 favorite horror directors when I did my list. So there we go. Girl from Rio. Okay, the next one here is from Unearthed Films, and they've been doing a great job lately, putting out the August Underground things and movies and some other things, and this one is kind of a surprise one, and this is one of these movies that's a bigger overseas. You can tell it's a big film, and I didn't really hear about it in the States, and that's a shame, because this is an excellent movie. This is Saburra. This is an Italian film from 2015, and this is kind of based on a lot of incidents, stuff that was going on in Italy around that time, crooked politicians, it tied in with the mob and the church, and all this kind of stuff here. So there's definitely going to be, you know, a gap for us Americans, unless you're really familiar with Italian politics and crime and all that kind of stuff and history. But for us, I could definitely tell that it was saying something deeper and more meaningful. But when I was watching this, it didn't stop me from getting completely invested in this film. It is 2 hours and, 15 minutes, somewhere around that time frame, and it doesn't feel that long. It's an excellent movie. The acting is amazing. And it opens up with a politician. You kind of introduced all these characters. We have these top-tier politicians, popes, all these religious figures, and these people that are really high up, all the way down to, you know, drug-using, you know, girlfriends of gangsters and thugs and prostitutes, underage prostitutes. And all these kind of people are tied into this world. The big names in here are, not big names, but the big characters are like a politician who basically gets stuck in a really bad position. When he was younger, he was involved in organized crime with his friends, and he kind of has got away from it, but now he needs to go and ask some favors from some, you know, Italian mobsters and everything like that, and they're old friends, and he kind of has to pull strings in politics and be a crook, to be honest, be corrupt. Because of something horrible that he did or was involved with. And he's directly tied with this prostitute that knows somebody who his father had just killed himself, that owes money to this kind of low level, they call them the gypsies in this group, this family that is kind of looked down upon in the crime world from the other Italians. And on top of that, we also have this kind of younger guy trying to make a name for himself, and his father was kind of a respected guy, and he is a very violent thug that works directly with the politicians. And through this series of misfortunes, abortions, somebody gets killed that really shouldn't. Now, it can be brushed over, but a lot of people's, you know, are headstrong. A lot of things get complicated. A lot of people know stuff they shouldn't know, and they flap their lips. And before long, we have an all-out mess on our hands. And there's a countdown throughout the entire film. It's telling us, you know, 4 days till the apocalypse. And it's raining an awful lot. It's raining an awful lot. I'll leave it at that. That whole stuff is subtle, I would say. More subtle. Maybe not completely subtle, but subtle enough to where you kind of see that kind of religious aspects in there as well. And you see the corruption and everyone just being completely horrible. Honestly, it's an excellent film. It's incredibly violent. The action scenes are great. There's a great crime chase scene through this crowded store, grocery store, where they're shooting at each other. The acting is amazing. And there's the family, I'm using their term in the film, the Gypsy family, is an excellent. The villain in that just is so great and so perfect. And he's got a buffoonery about him, but also an intensity and a scariness about him. He seems very real. And the interactions that these characters have with each other and how they all intertwine is perfect. This is an excellent film. This is one of the, and last week I watched what, the French crime film and the American crime film, Brian De Palma's Carlito's Way, and now I'm watching a modern day Italian crime film, which it made me so happy to see a modern day Italian film be this good. You know, because for a long time, Italy was the land of the maestros. All the best movies came from Italy from the 60s, 70s, and 80s for me. I loved them. And then we started getting the 90s, and they had some great ones. But then, you know, TV took over, and we started getting some really crummy movies. Honestly, I hate to say it, but there was a lot of crummy Italian films during that, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. There's a couple good ones, I know, and I'm more so used to the genre cinema, so I'm missing out on probably some bigger titles like this one. This is actually directed by Sergio Saloma's son. What is his first name? I want to make sure I get it right. Stefano Saloma. And Saloma did stuff like Violent City. He worked on Italian crime films and spaghetti westerns. So it's awesome to see his son pick up the mantle and make this updated crime film that just really feels real and hard-hitting and genuine. Excellent movie. I loved it. This is great stuff. This is Saburra. It's really big. It's a big film. It's an expensive film. It's a well-done film. Highly recommended. One of my favorite movies I saw this year so far. It's a gem. I think that, and being it from on Earth, people are gonna, you know, they'll probably accept some extreme stuff. There's some nudity, some graphic, you know, full frontal nudity and some sex and drug use, but I wouldn't, and there's violence, of course, but I wouldn't say this is any more violent than any other American crime film, maybe a little bit more with the nudity and stuff, but as far as the special features are, we got the making of Saburra. 2-hour full-length documentary. Extensive production gallery, teaser trailer, theatrical trailer. This is region locked, according to this. But great movie. I would watch this again. I would love to watch it with an audience or a couple people that I think they would dig it and get invested completely. You know, great stuff. Oh boy, we got a crazy one here to follow up Saburra with this one. Okay, what we have here is The Hood Has Eyes, originally from 2007. I watched this years back. This is how long I've been doing this, guys. I reviewed the original Hood Has Eyes DVD. Who directed this one? This is Terrence Williams. He did some other films, Gorno, which I've never got to see in the Curse. He did a La Llorona movie. So he kind of specializes, I guess, in these kind of throwback grindhouse nasty movies. And this one is real nasty. It's made do-it-yourself, DIY, really low budget. And that's kind of his aesthetic. You know, he likes that thing. Now, this is a director's cut. Now, I hadn't seen the original in so long. I did not remember exactly all the things in it. But there was a couple standout moments in this movie that, I could never forget. But the opening, I was like, I don't remember this. And I guess they reshot a scene that was supposed to be in the original, but it got cut because, you know, an actor quit on them. I listened to some of the commentary and everything like that. So this movie's probably been out of print on DVD for years, but now finally we have The Hood Has Eyes, and it's 72-minute glory here. That's right. So SRS is a good company for this one. But so it's a typical rape revenge film, and there's some untypical things about it. Now, in the opening, there are some comedy elements that I'm not sure if they work, really. And the revenge for the character, it kind of is very quick. You know, we don't have that moment of her sitting there and kind of registering or having that moment of really snapping. But the movie's 72 minutes. I feel like there's probably a lot more they wanted to do on this budget. It is actually shot in the hood. In LA area, you know, California, which is crazy. And it looks real. It looks genuinely shot there. The acting ranges, you know, I think that some of the characters do a good job. Some of the actors do a good job. Some are a little over the top or a little iffy. But the main villain is very disgusting and horrible. Now, his acting, I think, is good at places. I don't think he's a perfect actor, but it ranges back and forth. And some of the other, like, I think that most of the victims are really solid as well. All the female victims in here are good. I don't want to call anybody out just like there, but like there's just some differences and like acting and stuff, styles that don't match up. Like what some people be doing comedy routines, and like as is that is with a throwback or exploitation movie in general, a lot of them did have that kind of element. But I think this one would have worked better if it was 100% straight, like cut all the humor out. And I never say that, you know. I even in real day, everyday life, humor is there, right? Make it like I Spit on Your Grave 2, the remake deal, the sequel to the remake. This would have been pretty ballsy because this director doesn't pull any punches. I'll say that right now. He does not pull his punches. Basically, we're following three schoolgirls and a high schooler guy that picks them up, and they're in like very skimpy schoolgirl outfits, right? And they decide to go in the hood for something to get drugs. They do a little bit of drugs. There's a lot of sex right away. There's already like two or three sex scenes right in the opening of the movie, a brutal murder. This director's cut or aftermath of a murder. And so what happens is they get rolled by these few gangsters. We have, you know, this girl who plays decoy, and these two kind of guys, Joker and Psycho, stop them. And then they proceed to do what these kind of people do when they realize they don't have as much money or whatnot. They start to humiliate them. They rape them. The humiliation's pretty brutal. Honestly, like I was watching this and I was like, man, I remembered this rape scene being particularly unpleasant as hell, and it's still really unpleasant. You know, there's a couple of these really low budget horror films or you know, exploitation films that every once in a while they'll have like a rape scene and we're like, geez, man, that's brutal. And what They All Must Die was one of those. I can't think of the director's name off the top of my head, but I remember that one. I was like taking a step back on that. That was pretty rough stuff, and just in terms of how it's handled and everything. And this one's no different. There's a brutal anal rape in it, and there's a tampon stuff like right out of something like Hangover, all this kind of stuff here. But as like it goes on, it gets really fast, and I feel like there's not enough time between the actual assault to the revenge. I feel like it's rushed there. But overall, I think that I guess if you're looking for brutality and mean-spiritedness, it's there. It's really there, and there's a horrible twist at the very end. And in 2007, it meant a lot more than it does now, even though it still means a lot. It was a lot worse in 2007, to be honest. But you know, the special effects are nothing amazing. There's a lot of fake genitalia, but they're not horrible. I mean, they work for what they are. You know, it's brutal in its places. It's supposed to be brutal. I thought the score was decent for a low budget movie. I thought the aesthetic fit because it's a dirt cheap, dirty ass movie that's supposed to represent the old films of past. I do think tonally it's a little off. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But overall, I think if you're looking for these super low budget, nasty ass movies and you haven't seen this one, then you probably will like it because, I mean, during the early 2000s, there was some really nasty low budget stuff, to be honest. And I watched a lot of it early when I started doing YouTube, and I you know, revisiting a couple of them was like, oh boy, that one's just a little bit more messed up than I remember, you know. This is The Hood Has Eyes, and it is special features on here. We have a new director's alternate cut, of course, new 2022 trailer, commentary, behind the scenes, bloopers and outtakes, photo side show, trailers, SRS trailers, and more. And yeah, you know what? I never did get to see Gorno. Maybe I'll watch it after this. But the director on the commentary, he seemed to be a genuine fan, dropped a lot of knowledge on movies and talked a lot about making the movie, getting yelled at when he filming in places he shouldn't and working with the actresses and stuff. I mean, there is nudity before, like that's not involved with sexual assaults. I mean, people probably enjoy that, and maybe some horribly disgusting people enjoy the sexual assault too. Unfortunately, that's probably a thing. I'm sure of it. But The Hood Has Eyes. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people like to watch the most disturbing shit. Sometimes they can't get past low-budget disturbing stuff, but there's a lot of nasty stuff in the low-budget. And this one's one of them. Yeah. Like I said, some people probably maybe can't get past it and won't take it seriously because it's so low-budget. But there's a couple moments in here where I was like, that's pretty rough. Pretty rough stuff. That is The Hood Has Eyes. Obviously, a take on The Hills Have Eyes, of course. But, like the director says, more inspired by the director's other film, Last House on the Left. Okay, now we're going to hop into those 1981 movies.
Woe be unto him who opens one of the seven gateways to hell, because through that gateway, evil will invade the world.
Thank you. That'll live on, and no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. In this little town, when the 14th comes round, there's a silence and fear in the air. Remember the morn that the legend was born, all the shock and the horror was there. For the legend, they say, on a Valentine's Day is a curse that'll live on. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago. And no one will know as the years come and go of the horror from long time ago.
And the first up is The Orchard and Murder. And this is a 49-minute movie. This is from Kino Lorber Redemption's line. And I like what they do. A lot of that stuff is great. They have a lot of John Roland and Jess Franco and, you know, Mario Bava. So it's a really good line. And this one is a British film with a title like The Orchard and Murder. How could it not be? And you know what? I had not really heard much about this. A macabre tale of murder and mischief. Yes, mischief, indeed. this movie is so bizarre, it feels like it could be a real story. Like, watching it, I was like, this feels like it's based on a true incident. So, boy, this is really creepy. And I think it could be put into a feature, and I think I would like it. I really like the style, and I like this movie, I think, a little bit better than most people who saw it. So in the very opening, we have like kind of some narration or talking, a conversation over the credits, and it's a girl and a guy talking. Well, hey, why don't you come watch me play cricket, and we can kind of fool around, yada yada yada. So we have a beautiful kind of like shot coming down, crane shot of the game and everything. We kind of go over to the orchard, the apple orchard, and these two are kind of fooling around. It's a really nice shot, really nice establishing shot that you're in the country, you're an isolated area, and they're far away. So while her boyfriend or the guy she's with has to go play, she decides to kind of wander off and takes a trolley, I believe, into the small town next door. She kind of walks there, and she meets this kind of strange gentleman who has a hunchback, and he's very bizarre, and he has all these garden gnomes in his yard. It's a really nice upkept yard, and he invites her in for some tea. He seems very lonely, very bizarre, but kind of like, I wouldn't trust him, but I'm also, no, I'm watching a horror film. Invites her in, and she meets kind of his helper, who looks like Richard Mole from Night Court. And you kind of know where this is going. And it's pretty fast-paced. And he's unsettling, and he kills a rabbit. So if you are going to be really bothered by seeing a real animal death or a real animal skinning, then skip this. It's really well shot, though, and well made, too. So it kind of took me back when I saw that. You know, it didn't feel like this, like, dirt cheap, nasty exploitation movie. So that rabbit bit it. I was like, oh, that was pretty pretty extreme. But what happened, I mean, it was clearly a rabbit they're going to eat, but it's still unpleasant to watch, I'm going to be honest. So what happens is, of course, she's wandering back and she runs into the guy. And what happens is there's a murder that takes place. And it's really brutal, unconsensual stuff going on. But there's like images from this movie that will kind of be burned into your memory. And one of them is hiding a body in a pile of discarded apples. And just that kind of face sticking out and whatnot. There's a lot of it. You feel the English countryside really, really well in this film. You can feel the coldness or the bitterness or the beautiful, like, tree. Everything. It really feels like fall. You can just sense the apples, the smell, everything. And like, there's a nice little scene where in the beginning, the old man has, like, this jar of honey and, like, a yellow jacket flies in there. And he's like, oh, yeah, sweet tooth got the bit of you now. And it's just, like, setting a trap, right? He's, like, setting a trap for these people. And it just feels that way. Really good film. Really well done. Enjoyed it. And the ending is satisfying, too, how it ends. And it probably would end like that. This is The Orchard End Murder. Really recommend it. I like this. I like this quite a bit. Now, it's listed as a horror film on Letterboxd. It's more of a crime thriller, but I do see horror aspects. A little bit creepy stuff in here. As far as the special features, an interview with Christian Marnham, interview with actress Tracy Hyde, interview with actor David Wilkinson, The Showman, 25-minute, the documentary short directed by Christian Marnham, and Christian Marsham on The Showman. Honestly, I thought the acting was tremendous, really. There's kind of three main actors in here, and they all do a great job. They're all, you know, two of them are very creepy, and the girl in here, I really liked her. I was really, I mean, I obviously wanted to live, but if there's no Orchard End Murder, then what is the movie called? Orchard End Murder, right? So I knew what was going to happen. Okay, now we have some TV movies. The first one I guess we'll do is The Intruder. And this is not actually a TV movie, but I could have swore it was. So I'm watching this movie, and I was like, this is very Canadian. This is so, this is very much like Needful Things, or Something Wicked This Way Comes. Both movies made after, actually, but the Ray Bradbury story, I'm sure, is written before 81. Yeah, and it's just kind of a typical story here, right? We have this kind of small town, and this guy kind of comes in. He's the intruder. He's the tall, dark stranger, right? And the town kind of is very small and very personal. And there's half this movie is the town folks sitting in a room talking about, what are we going to do about this stranger? What are we going to do about this? And we have kind of like their backgrounds and their intertwining, all this kind of shit. There's a lot of drama, a lot of like melodrama, dramatic stuff going on. And eventually, you know, the intruder has something weird in his, like, kind of in his like traveling van that he has in the town square, and everybody's after it. They're obsessed with it, including the mayor and all the people that have any power in this town. And what happens is they kind of open up what's in there. And these people eventually all get infected with something where they kind of glow. But the people that glow have to be forced to tell the truth. So it's kind of like Horns with Daniel Radcliffe, right? And which is a really cool movie, much better than this, actually, directed by Alexander Aja. And so the people start to tell the truth, and it kind of changes things. But then they kind of fade away, and it goes back. And it's just like, what is the real point to this movie? Honestly, it's kind of just a bizarre little Canadian oddity, which is another Canadian oddity from this year is The Pit, which I would recommend The Pit much more than The Intruder. But the thing that took me back as well as watching it, there's like characters that come in and they have these relationships and they're just having like sex and there's a lot of nudity. I was like, why is there like, I saw full frontal. I was like, in this movie, I could have swore this was a TV movie. You put gun to the head, I would have said this is a Canadian cheap TV movie. And like you recognize one person in the film, and that's the woman from The Funeral Home. She's in Funeral Home, another Canadian movie by William Fruit from the year previous, and she's also in Dirty Work. You thought my mom was a drug dealer? No, I thought she was a whore. If anybody's ever seen Dirty Work, she's the grandmother or the grandmother of the girl from Dharma and Greg in it. So yeah, she's in here as a crossing guard. She's got, you know, some negative things to say about the mayor's adopted kids, of course. But no, it's just like a decent amount of nudity here and there and sex, which I thought was kind of a little bit more exciting about it just because it took me back. And I was like, that's interesting. But overall, the movie's not great. Jeremy saw part of it and he made a joke about it. And it was just like, I want Something Wicked This Way Comes. It's like, we have Something Wicked This Way Comes at home. And then obviously this was Something Wicked This Way Comes at home. Not great, but odd and interesting in a kind of a way. So I mean, if it sounds like it's up your alley, check it out. I don't know if it's on YouTube. I don't think it is. So I might have to track down a copy of The Intruder. Okay, the next one is actually a TV movie called This House is Possessed, or This House Possessed. I'm sorry, I'm dumb. But yeah, this movie right here. This one kind of caught my interest at first, but I was like, is this just The Demon Seed? Which is a movie that I've heard about for years and never actually got to watch. So this right here is a TV movie, and an American one this time. And I was watching it, and we following this rock star, this kind of country singer or whatnot. And it was like 10 minutes, and I was like, huh. Is that who I think it is? His manager? I was like, no way that's who I think it is. And it was. His manager is Slim Pickens. I was so happy to see Slim Pickens in this movie. Also did The Howling this year. Very excited to see Slim Pickens in here. He's the best part of the fucking movie. So, of course, this country singer, he gets, like, an injury and he has to, like, relax and get some personal kind of like, you know, therapy. And he kind of falls for this nurse. So he buys this big ass gorgeous house that has a lot of trouble behind it. Obviously there's a mystery behind it, and he buys it. And, you know, right away things start to be really weird. The house gets very possessive of the nurse in here, won't let her go. You kind of think where this is going, and random characters that show up, obviously you're going to get killed. Who's going to get killed? You know, the country singer's floozy is going to get scared away. His manager's going to get hurt. A librarian that knows about the curse. So yeah, it's basically kind of a mystery to figure out what happened at this house and stop it before it takes her over. It's not exactly the most interesting movie. It's not horrible. It's well made, honestly, for a TV movie. It's well shot. It's kind of well directed, but for the most part, it's kind of dull. It's very dull. There's a lot of dull movies this week, to be honest. The Orchard End Murder. Who would think that the British crime thriller horror film is the least dull of all the 1981 movies I watched, right? When I say The Orchard End Murder, you're like, that's dull. That's great. But now people would think it's dull. No, it is the least dull movie out of the four movies, honestly. So this one right here, yeah, I can't really highly recommend This House Possessed. It's not horrible. It's not great. It's just very, very, hey, I'm here on a lazy Sunday watching this kind of killer house movie. That's about it, right? I can't even remember exactly why the house is trying to... There's something tied in with people in there. I can't... That's bad. I know. It's just that's sometimes the way it is. You watch a movie and then you get up and walk away. And you're like, what was that? What was that about? I don't know. You're like, then maybe, Dave, you should do some research and refresh yourself. Well, yeah, I probably should have. But guess what? This House Possessed didn't deserve it. Sorry. A little too far? Maybe. I don't know. Check it out for Slim Pickens. When he cashes out, you too. You do the same. Okay, the next one from 1981 is No Place to Hide, another TV movie here. This one does have some recognizable faces in here. It does have Keira Dulia, who is in 2001 A Space Odyssey. He's in a bunch of other films as well. You'd recognize him if you saw him, obviously. I'm afraid I can't do that, Dave. So yeah, this movie is very predictable. 1981 kind of gaslighting horror thriller deal, more thriller than horror, very gothic, right? And it's kind of a throwback to the old Hammer movies where it's like, we're gonna inherit this, or even before that, right? Super gothic storyline where we have this young girl, she's 20 years old, and she starts to see this kind of masked guy everywhere she goes. Right in the beginning, there's a really good scene where she's driving a car and somebody pops up and says, soon, Amy, soon, and she almost crashes her car, and nobody else sees this person, right? Nobody else can see her, so obviously she has some psychological damage. She lives with her stepmom, and they have a good relationship, seemingly. Right away, you can kind of guess what's going on. Her father died under mysterious circumstances. So you're like, okay, this is clearly some sort of gothic kind of murder, get-rich inheritance scheme, right? Right off the bat. It takes about 2.5 seconds of watching one of these movies to know. And so you kind of have the idea here. Are they going to go the route where she's crazy and she actually is going to start killing people, yada, yada, yada? Or are we going to go the route where the stepmother is evil, or the doctor helping her is evil, or they're all evil, or this boyfriend is evil, or the lawyer's evil? So we have all these different kind of characters here. The boyfriend that she meets is actually played by Gary Graver, who is it Graver? I think so. He pops up in Robot Jocks, the Stuart Gordon movie. That's where I recognized him from, and he's solid in this. This movie actually has pretty solid acting for the most part. The stepmom's great. The daughter's really good. Keir's great. So, like, this one is probably, you know, the best acted of the bunch, honestly, even though the one had Slim Pickens and nobody out acts Slim Pickens. By tarnation, nobody does. I mean, I think this one and This House Possessed both were solidly acted TV movies. And this one, I think, is probably a little bit better, a little bit more exciting for sure than the other two TV or the Intruder as well. technically the Orchard End Murders is a TV movie too for BBC, I'm sure, but so we have a bunch of TV movies and one that really should have been. But so yeah, this one it's okay, like, but it's just very predictable, unfortunately. And even I was like, that's got to be it. And I was like, oh, maybe it's not. You know, that's kind of where they do that thing where it's like, it's this, and then you're like, oh, maybe it's not. And it's like, oh, it is, it is, it, yeah, it's just, I don't know, I can't like wholeheartedly recommend this, but it's not absolutely garbage either. They do a double twist, but you can see that coming too. Like, I don't know, it's like when I watched a lot of those like Hammer House of Horrors where they had like the twist in there for 1980, I was just like, I probably had seen half of them when I was a kid, but I didn't remember all of them. But I'm sitting there watching it, I'm like, oh my god, man, I've seen this movie 500 times already. But isn't it funny how I can watch The Prowler or The Burning or My Bloody Valentine or Friday the 13th 1 through 6 and be like, I've seen this 100 times, but I'm like, I like it. But then like we get like a thrillers and stuff like that, and anytime there's like it basically lives and dies on its twist, and the twist is just a movie you've seen 50 times, it gets old. So thrillers, you know, thrillers don't have as, if it's more thriller than horror, a lot of times it's really hard to have playback value for me, especially if it lives and dies on its twist, unless it's completely forgettable, then I guess you can watch it a dozen times. Sometimes giallo have that, gialli, well, you'll watch it and you'll forget it, and you'll watch it again, like, oh, that's great. Gialli is a little bit, you know, more playback than some of the thrillers, American thriller counterparts. Not all of them, though. I mean, there's just a lot of them that are, have playback value. But this No Place to Hide, it's okay. I watched a lot of it's okay 1981 movies this time. There's got to be a couple videos like that, right? And this is the Patreon pick here, and this is Survive Style 5. And I was kind of shocked that there wasn't a Blu-ray floating around of this movie. I was like, there's no Blu-ray? There's no HD print I can rent? I was like, I guess I'm going to pull out this old DVD on here. And of course, we got Asano in here, and freaking Sonny Chiba's in this. I didn't even recognize Sonny Chiba in this movie. I honestly didn't. I don't even know where he was. And Vinnie Jones, of course, is in here too. Asano is in every Japanese movie you've ever seen. This one's from 2004. It also has the guy who pops up in 13 Assassins, the older gentleman who's in every Japanese movie ever, and he kind of steals the show, to be honest. So we have five stories here, and they're all kind of intertwined loosely with all these different characters. I'll start with Vinnie Jones is an assassin, and he's basically been flown in from another assassin, and it's a really funny gag where the two walk around and the Japanese guy basically interprets what he says, and Vinnie Jones always is like, what's your deal, and always this whole thing like that, and he has to explain it, and he interacts with all the characters. Asano is a man who really just wants his wife to die. In the very beginning, he kills her, and he's kind of stuck in this fun house of houses. This is this crazy, weird, giant, elaborate house that's built insane with rooms of craziness, and it's very beautiful looking and weird and surreal. So he's kind of trying to get rid of her all the time, but she keeps coming back and beating the ever-living shit out of him through all these different kinds of torture, including making him eat a lot. And then we have my favorite story, which is this kind of salary man. He's an older gentleman. He ends up winning these tickets, or getting these tickets from a colleague that's a little high above him, or somebody that is a, you know, basically a client for this, the world's famous hypnotist. And his family's super excited. He says, we're going to skip your school, forget it, we're going to go see this hypnotist, right? So they go, and what happens is he is on basically the assassin's list, and he basically hypnotizes his father to think he's a bird. And he is promptly killed on stage before he can get the father to snap out of it. So this father, throughout the entire movie, we're talking middle-aged man, actor that you know, is walking around like a bird the entire movie. It is fucking hilarious. It's beautiful. It's genius. And this movie is super weird, super bizarre. Like, I'm having trouble, like, connecting it. It was just definitely a product of its time, 2004, bizarre, surreal, silly, absurdist Japanese comedy. And at first I was like, I don't know if I like this. I don't know if I think it's funny. I just don't know if it's working. But then when I came back to watch, like, the second half of it, I was like, this totally works for me. I'm laughing. It's beautifully shot. All the locations are great. There's a couple other stories in here as well. One about an ad exec. Oh, she's the ad director. She makes commercials, and she has the worst ideas ever. And the movie will just stop to have her think of her ideas and laugh to herself. And they're just the most outrageous, most ridiculously Japanese shit you could ever see. So, like, we have all these different characters, and they're all intermingling and everything like that. And we have a group of three friends. And one is clearly, like, a homosexual, and he's got, like, really bad teeth, and he's obsessed with this one. And, like, every time they'll make this, like, eye contact, you think they're going to, like, make out or anything like that. And this is, like, gets really intense. Also really funny stuff going on with those three and that. I like this a lot. This was really funny. This is really clever. There's payoffs at the end. Everybody's gets their moments to shine in it. I would really recommend Survive Style 5. And I think it's a Toei. I think it is a Toei film or Toho. One of the big companies owns it. I saw the logo in the beginning. And I was just like, or on the commercial. I was like, oh shit, I would love to see this get a nice Blu-ray. I would love to. I don't know why. Is there the rights held up? There's a great soundtrack. Probably that could be it. There's a lot of covers of famous songs and good music and everything. Anyways, I love Survive Style 5. I think a lot of people will enjoy it if they see it. But, you know, it does flirt that line with where it's almost so absurd where you could be like, I don't know if this is going to work for me. It almost didn't work for me, but somehow it pulled me in and won me over, and I loved it. So great stuff. Great pick to whoever picked that on the Patreon pick. All right, guys, like I said, no basically Q&A until next week or comments or answers or anything like that. So, yeah, you guys, as always, have a good one. Oh, wait, I messed the end up. As always, you guys have a good one. Oh, wait, I messed it up again. Guess what, guys? I am not doing that again. We're gonna roll with it. We're gonna roll with it because we're gonna show the one that I have to update here. You guys can see all the bloopers and all the glory here. Yeah, that's right. One movie from Scream Factory, 1977, The Pack on Blu-ray. This is a really fun, great movie. Some special features. I love it. Lee Gamut's on here. New interview with Hope. Some interviews with some of the actors and people on there. Because I remember when I watched the DVD of this, I was like, I'd like some information on The Pack. I thought it was pretty great. But anyways, great movie. Animals attack movie about a bunch of abandoned dogs killing people on this kind of island resort. Anyways, we're out of here.